Mr. James, Reel 42. So, at 159 Transit Camp, you said off the tape that you'd revert to this CSM at this stage,
that's
the Company
right.
Sergeant Major.
Once you lose your, every rank, every promotion that everybody knows in the Army is yourself as an acting officer, or acting officer, and you've got to keep it for, in the case of a regiment, for a regiment army, you've got to keep it for 12 months. And if you are lucky to be static and you can sort of carry out your duties and last 12 months, you keep it, and you become water plenty of all the time, you don't lose it. But on posting, it was automatic. You lost the rank and you reverted to your former war substantive rank, which is W02. And so I was told that I was no longer needed at the Milan. The camp was closing down. Although I was recommended by the Brigadier Commandant, Brigadier Matthews, commanding 59A, which is Milan, for a quarter mile commission as a W01, acting W01, it made no difference. I could still go on as a W02 for this commission. But I lost it, and I had to revert to war substantive company sergeant at the transit camp.
Did that mean a reduction in pay?
Yes, a little reduction in pay, not very much, when you coppers really. But I was a little bit peeved about that. But it was, you couldn't think about it, because this is the Army. And on posting, I lost it, but nevertheless, I had sufficient authority, and I was quite happy with my job. I was quite happy to carry on as W02, knowing that my release number 28 didn't apply to me, because I'd forgotten that I had been persuaded a month after I joined in 1940 to sign on for 7 years and 5 on the reserve. By a very illustrious corporal in the depot, God knows very, he couldn't get on commission, but he persuaded, I like boxing, and I admired him, and I used to love the boxing matches at the ITC, and I was skilled in boxing myself, and growing up in the Welsh Valley, you had to be a good fighter, otherwise you wouldn't survive, you know. But he persuaded me anyway to sign on. He says, February 1940, he said, this war, nobody's seen the end of it. He said, sign up for 7 years, you won't be over with anything. He says, everybody else has done it, so I said, he said, come on, Tappy. So I did the weak moment, and I'd forgotten all about it. I had signed. And whether the war finished the following week or whatever, I would still serve 7 years. Now, I was happy, because having had a hard time pre-war, away from home, living in lodgings, suffering painfully, I loved the Army because it had good food and clothes and it had provided for me. And so my frame of mind then was, this is the life for me. I loved it, whereas others were crying, wanted to go home. So I did sign on for 7, thinking, well, if I survive and see that 7 years, I should be happy. You know, if we all casualties, I wouldn't know anything about it. But I survived, and I forgot all about it till 1946, when the release numbers came. No, I'm release. I'm number 28, according to my service and age and length or so on. But I was rudely reminded by York, the regular office, that I was a 7th-5-year man. And I would be transferred eventually. My service would finish in February of 1947, not in May 46. And whether I stayed on in the Army or not, that was it. I could, if I wanted to, leave on the 22nd of February 1947, and then serve 5 years on the reserve, which would take me up to 1952. So that was what it was. And I had to soldier on, carry on. And I was undecided at the very end about whether I should sort of, because my name wasn't moving up at all, and there were so many waiting for commissions. I was going to be there for 2 or 3 years and doing all sorts of funny jobs, being posted here, there, and everywhere, filling in time. All my friends had gone home. I was happy with the job in Bologna. I was said, go on to the lectures, so we changed our control job, which was quite a good job, and it was quite a nice life. But I did decide eventually that because the wait would be so long, and thinking, well, if I leave it too late, I won't get a job in City Street, I elected to come out until they come to Commander.
Well, that's moving us forward a little bit too far, Mr. James. But at this stage, I think you mentioned off the tape there was talk of war with the Russians and so on. And what was that?
The commander, Captain Weston.
And where was this at?
At the Bologna.
Which at 159?
At 159, eventually, at 159, transit camp, eventually closed down as well. And after many months. But while I was there, of course, it was a life similar to the life at the Assembly Centre. Drafts coming through, drafts being posted out and sent out to the station. Meanwhile, the permanent staff of this camp had quite a good life. They were allowed to go to the lakes every Sunday, you know, Lake Como and Lago Maggiore, and we saw the beautiful place called Spresa, and it was just wonderful. We had a captured German chatter in this mudbag line thing, and this captured German chatterbag was ours, and we had all the petrol we wanted for it, and we used to use that to go to the lakes, and we also had a football team, and we went one day up to Domodossola, which was the most extreme North Italian town in the Alps before the Simplon Tunnel. Before Switzerland. And we went to Domodossola and played a game of football there against another army team using our charabang. And we had a lovely life, really. We had dances in this one-time land transit camp, patronized well by the local girls. I'd tell them were film star quality girls. They were beautiful, honestly. And they should turn up and bring their friends wanting to sort of take part in the, it was a party atmosphere. We had a big dance hall there in this one-time transit camp. And we could have, you know, with records and radiogram. But there was a bar, and we had a parrot in this bar. Some vicious bugger in the middle of the night strangled it. I've never forgotten that. This bloody parrot was lovely. And some drunken sergeant. I'd all ripped up like a snake. And we found it dead on the floor. One of us a bastard here. If I knew who it was, that he murdered the bloody parent. Terry, I've forgotten that. And, but it was a lovely life. And eventually, we closed down. And I was told that it was closing down. I had to go on again to further adventures. And I was posted to Bologna. Suddenly, it was quite away from Milan, Bologna, and I was posted there anyway to report to Old Garrison Company, which was under train guard control. The Old Garrison Company was a place where all sorts of soldiers, whose regiments and battalions had become disbanded and depleted. And they were also soldiers with time to serve. And they were sent to Old Garrison Company for garrison duties. And I was sent there as the Commissar Major. And that was the opening of a new chapter, a new book, which was a good chapter as well.
Could you talk about that then, what your duties there were? You
yes. I was told that we had this big pool of men. We also had there about a dozen or 15 German prisoners of war who were already there when I arrived, and I was introduced to them as the new sergeant major, and I was introduced to the sergeant in charge, whose name was Arthur Hark, H-A-R-K-E, and he was a very, very spruce and efficient and good disciplinarian. He was the German sergeant in charge of these Jerry prisoners of war, who had been sent from him and his prisoner war camp to the Old Garrison Company for duties as cooks and backmen and all sorts of other duties they could find. They were under Sergeant Hart, and so I left it all to him for their discipline, and that you know, they were not allowed to run amok or go out or whatever, but he did his job, and he became my backman. And so he pressed my trousers every day, and he sent my medals on, and he couldn't speak English, and I couldn't speak German, really. I mean, I had a smattering, but we could both speak Italian fluently. So we decided to teach each other our language, and I taught him English using the Italian language, and he taught me German. And he was my backman. He was quite a nice old chap. Anyway, his cooks, they were very good cooks, and they cleaned the place up, and they had all sorts of duties, and they were usefully employed, and they were very well disciplined and obedient. And my duties there, of course, was to allocate. I had sergeants, I had the numerous sergeants that I could sort of put in charge of train guards, and I was supplying train guards to the Bologna vast marshalling yard, where all the reconstruction of Europe goods were sort of coming from America to Italy, but the trains were assembled in the marshalling yards of Bologna, going to all parts of Europe with underground goods required by the German people, for example, and the Austrian people, food, all sorts of commodities that were in short supply, to build up Europe again. And these trains were leaving for America. It must have cost them millions, but they were the providers for the rebuilding and reconstruction of Europe. And so the trains were leaving, very, very long trains, full of all sorts of commodities. They had been earlier attacked by bandits and thieves who broke the seals of these trucks and threw out the stuff we had earlier, and collected it afterwards when the train had passed by. And because of the numerous raids, each train had to have armed guards, front and back, with orders to shoot to kill if they were attacked by bandits, and they had to attack they had to protect these trains going to all parts of Europe. I knew where they were going, and I knew how long they'd be away, and I knew when they were to return, but I had sufficient men to provide guards for all these trains leaving. The chap in charge was a lieutenant colonel Edney, we very, very saw him, but he was from rumour control, but we knew that he was the boss. And he left us to our, because he did the job very well. We only saw him once in a blue moon when he'd come down just about occasion to smile and chat with us. But he was boss.
And were your trains ever attacked in the time that you were there?
Oh, there were several incidents, and they were all reported, and of course the troops contained it.
So can you remember any specific incidents?
I vaguely remember reports when they came back, that... there was a raid on this particular train on the way to Austria or whatever. It's a long time now, but everything was reported by the sergeants in charge, and these reports went better than Colonel Henry.
And were the bandits successful ever in obtaining?
Sometimes, but not in the earlier times they had been. But we were really now really organized with sufficient men to guard the trains, and it worked. And that was the main job.
And did you ever remember incidents where the bandits were actually shot at?
I can only vaguely remember the reports, I've now even forgotten the names of the NCOs that I had. And I used to have it all once, but I've got some of the names of the miscreants who were court martialed for the set and the other.
So there was discipline?
Oh, yes. And also, of course, where we were in Bologna, we were very vulnerable as well, because we were living. the different things called Corticella. C-O-R-T-I-C-E-L-L-A, Corticella, which is a picturesque little village about where the families went from Bologna City up to it, it's about half an hour in the camp. And in this Corticella little complex, we built a compound. We had a fence compound, we had a guard every night on the compound, and our village were within the compound. But the public commander's house was outside of the compound, across the road, where were the roses in the garden and all that, you know, and it was a lovely house and company office. That was company quarters. So that had to be guarded as well at night. But of course, there were many, many thieves in Bologna, especially deserters. And one night, our lives were. It was reported to me anyway the following morning that we had been in the night attacked by thieves and that they'd stolen tires and things like that. And I had conducted an inquiry, and so we got the notes in my files, where it is, I was told that I refused to be a clerk who was should have been on guard, changed guard duties without permission, and was one of the collaborators with deserters. It all came out that he was in charge. And crux was anyway that somebody had blamed the Jerrys for the theft. But Private Fryer, a cook, an English cook, working with the Jerrys, wouldn't have that. He was defending the Jerrys, and he knew what had happened. And he came to me and gave me all the truth about Clegg's involvement with deserters. And I was told that if I went down to the city of Bologna the following afternoon at 3 p.m., all these would attack the company lines and stone the tires, including the English deserters with Italian thieves, could be found in a certain cafe. And I devised a plan to go down there with about 10 armed blokes, and I armed myself with a pistol, and the company commander came down as well, into his pickup, and we quietly got near to this cafe and surrounded it and charged it, and they all came running out. And there was a bit of a fisticuff battle, and I shouted, "Hold the right fire!" And I got this English deserter who had been sentenced for 10 years in Niagara Barracks, Austria, for armed robbery, and who had escaped, and with the black paunch on his hair. He was ginger. And I nabbed him and arrested him and threw him in my truck, and eventually took him all to the CMP headquarters in Bologna. They said to me, "Where did you find this bug? And we've been looking for it for months." And I got accommodation for that, for capturing the bandits.
And when you mentioned discipline, there was discipline problems within your own ranks, within the men that you were assigning to. What did that spring from? What was the, apart from the black market, were there any other reasons for ill discipline?
Thieving, black market, disobeying orders, things like that. Oh yes, I had to be strict with them. Largely, it was it was a funny situation really to have men away from you going on these train guards and coming back, and then you've got to sort of take them in hand. They like freedom out of my sight. And they were back in there, and they couldn't get away in another train guard job fast enough.
So they would look forward to those duties. And what would be the senior rank of a party of guards then?
A sergeant. I had countless sergeants, and we had quite a sergeant's mess there as well.
Did you ever go on these duties yourself?
No, I didn't. I was too involved there. But it was a very, very happy time for me because it was an easy time. The war was over. And it's the job that I had to fulfil there. And it was a smashing job. It was an easy job to me. You know what I mean?
Was this at the stage, we've talked off the tape, was this at the stage where an officer advised you that there was going to be war with the Russians? Yes. What stage was this at?
Well, he said to me, he said...
Who was that?
Captain Westland said to me, he said, Sergeant, he said, looking at the news, the war is over. We are bound to go to war with Russia. He said, you're saying you want to go home. He said, take my advice, stay in, and we came here back. He said, if you go home and you are called back up after 6 months when there's a war with Russia, you'll be called back and you won't get your back again. You'll probably come back at a much slower rate. So I said, do you think so, sir? He said, I bloody know so. He said, this is what happens if you leave the army, you know, and it's a day. He says, you'll come back and you'll be underling again. So I said, well, I'll take that chance, I think. I said, I think that the man must agree with you that it seems to be a bit dodgy when Churchill has declared there's an iron curtain. And that he doesn't trust the Russians, and that we might have to go to war against them. I said, this is what the Jays will say, it's an error to me. We should get together and fight the common enemy, the communists. I know that communism was a scourge, and Joe Stalin was a tricky chap, you know. He committed terrible atrocities, even during the war, the young television.
Yeah.
Against Russia, they would murder their own chaps.
So
we thought anyway that it was going to be a war with Russia, and I was set fair for it. And I thought, right, well, there's a lot of sense in what he says. But if I go out, and if I come back with my disability, they can't have me because I know that I've got nothing in my right ear, and I'm permanently one. He's forgetting this, but I could be called back for duties. Not a different one. I wanted to go out and take that chance. Yeah, so I decided to go out anyway.
So you weren't persuaded by his argument?
He nearly did it. But when I went home, I got letters from the Ministry of Defence. We'll give you the opportunity to rejoin in your rank. We need your skills. And I nearly did then, because I seriously wasn't all it was cracked up to be. It's a stuff of trips. We work on want and no prosperity of any kind. We were still rationed. It was a hard, cold, horrible place to be.
Oh, well, we'll get on to once you've been there. But in the old garrison company, any other incidents from this period of your career?
No, apart from the fact that eventually we moved from Port to Charlotte. The orders gave them that they take over the barracks in a different part of Bologna, and that Port to complex was closing down, and we would be moving very, very quickly. The Jerrys were ordered back to the Germany Principal Camp unwanted, and we moved from that location still to another location, to a barracks that we took over. The Germans said to me before they left, the sergeant said, can you please write us a letter of recommendation? Because we then went to Rimini prison war camp, and he said he was promised that if they did a good job, when they arrived before my time, if they did a good job, they would get early release. And he hoped that the British Army would maintain this promise. So I said, well, I'd never heard about this promise. He said, no, but it was given to me by the former Sergeant Major before I arrived. So I said, well, you've done well anyway. I'll give you, Sergeant Hark, a letter in my own hand showing that you and your men and worked very diligently and willingly here, and gave us every cooperation. And I will recommend, if possible, an early return to your fatherland. So I gave him that letter, and he thanked me and took it and went away. And 2 days later, he was home, and he sent me a letter. It's a symbol, written in German, thanking me for what I did. They were all immediately released from the prisoner of war camp and sent back to Zibbe Street. I think he was a farmer's son, and he came from Wolfenbüttel in Germany. That's how we did it.
And during this period, again off the tape, you talked a little bit. You mentioned this the involvement with the Cossacks and the disarmament of the Cossacks.
When we were at this barracks one day, almost shortly after we moved into there, a red breveted officer came from other forces quarters with prison vehicles. Now, I don't know whether it was 6 or 8, but they were prison cage, big vehicles with iron cages in them. And a place at the back where two chaps can sit outside of the cage, and a place in front of them, one chap pulled the barrel, and he came and said, where's your commanding officer? And I said, he said, I'm from the Army Forces of Quarters. It's very, very important. So anyway, I got the company commander, and he was in private chaplain. And as hobbling about things, I went outside and looked at the prison noise. And a chap with the driver's involvement. And anyway, eventually the company commander came out. Ah, Major? He said, an important job, an urgent job. This is, I think he was a full colonel. I mean, had we even read banner is properly done. He said, just a job for you. He said, up your street. He said, get 20 men, the best men we've got in the pool at the moment. FSMO, rifle and ammunition. You were to go with this officer. When you're ready, he says, get cracking straight away. He said, the officer will brief you when you've got the men. So I got these chaps, toughest blokes I could get, and this officer was very kind, and he briefed us, and he said that there were approximately 90 or 100 or something like that Cossacks who escaped into Italy from Austria. They were on the run, they were a wily bunch, nobody could catch them, many people had tried, they were armed to the teeth. They had been fighting on the side of the Germans at Stalingrad. And they had committed atrocities, or he painted a terrible picture. And they were at large in Italy, and intelligence had informed Allied forces and quarters that they were to be found at the moment in a large displacement camp in Modena, which was a few miles north of Modena. Where they had these displacement camps all over Europe, incidentally, where people from all sorts of countries, at least like from the Auschwitz places like that, they were displaced persons from other countries, they were on the move back to where they belonged. And there were so many wandering displaced persons over in Europe at this time that these camps were set up. I mean, I didn't know this camp was just in Modena, but they had information from the camp commandant in Modena that all these Cossacks that they'd been hunting for months were in this displaced camp, sleeping there at the moment. And we were going to catch them. We were going to, they were so wily that if they saw us arriving in Modena, they would scatter. So we must go into Modena. We're going to stay a few miles outside of Modena. They'd arranged a meal for us, a big meal with plenty of beer, that we were to get drunk. And we went with him, and we were to go in at about 3 a.m, when the camp commander would be expecting us, and we would surround the camp, which was a vast sort of camp of enormous buildings in, and we would see every entrance and exit, and we'd go in, and he would point out quietly where their beds were, and we wouldn't very quiet in the middle of the night.